This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehiz Wuhib. Coming up on Africa News Tonight,
a superhero, if you really want to get the feel of what he's being talked about here in France today. 22 years old, he was just walking down the street, the north of Paris on Saturday afternoon, heard people shouting, heard people saying, help, help, looked up and saw a young child, a four-year-old child, dangling from the balcony four stories up.
That's reporter Catherine Field in Paris. We'll have full details on the story coming up.
Also, the UN Children's Fund warns the Ebola outbreak in the DRC threatens the health and well-being of children, and an Ethiopian lawyer and disability rights activist receives the 2018 Spirit of Helen Keller Award in New York City.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story, the UN Children's Fund warns the Ebola outbreak in the DRC threatens the health and well-being of children, and special care must be taken to help them survive. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
Children in Ebola-affected areas of DR Congo face many risks. The first is that of basic survival. Ebola is highly contagious, killing between 20 and 90% of its victims. The UN Children's Fund is addressing this problem by engaging communities in the fight against Ebola. UNICEF spokesman Christophe Bouillirac says schools are crucial for minimizing the risk of transmission among children.
UNICEF is scaling up prevention efforts in school across all the three affected health zones. This includes ongoing efforts to install hand-washing units in 277 schools and supporting awareness-raising activities reaching more than 13,000 children in Bandaka, Bikoro, and Iboko.
Previous outbreaks of Ebola in DRC and most recently in the horrific epidemic in West Africa have shown the high level of trauma experienced by children at the loss of family members. Bouillirac tells VOA orphan children often become social outcasts because of their association with this fatal disease.
There is, as you mentioned rightly, the risk of stigma. And the risk that the child, when his father, his caregiver, his mother is affected, the child is psychologically affected.
Bouillirac says UNICEF is taking preventive measures. He says trained therapists are providing assistance to families affected by the Ebola outbreak. He says they also are helping children cope psychologically with the trauma of losing loved ones. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
And Uganda's Ministry of Health has disputed the reports of an Ebola outbreak in the country. This followed reports that a 35-year-old man had died in Uganda's central district of Mubendi after showing Ebola-like symptoms. However, the ministry says blood samples tested negative for Ebola but positive for Crimean Congo hemorrhagic fever, which is less deadly than Ebola. Uganda has been placed on a high Ebola alert following a confirmed outbreak in the Democratic Republic of Congo. VOA's Catherine Nambi files this report from Kampala.
Ugandans have been thrown in panic after a 35-year-old man died on the 23rd of May 2018 at Mubende Hospital, where he had been referred with Ebola-like symptoms, including vomiting, high fever, and bleeding. Uganda's health ministry took the deceased's blood samples to the Uganda Virus Research Institute for further examination. Sarah Upendi is Uganda's Minister of State for Health. She says the samples instead confirmed another hemorrhagic fever, which is not Ebola.
I want to allay the fears and anxiety of the public that we do not have any Ebola outbreak in the country. However, what we have is the Crimean Congo hemorrhagic fever, and of course we should note that this is not a new outbreak. We've had these cases right from 2013, 2017, and 2018.
According to Upendi, all those who came in contact with the deceased are under close monitoring and isolation.
The attendants of the deceased, who included his expectant wife, were immediately quarantined and they are closely being monitored. To mitigate any possible exposure from contact with the suspect, all materials used by the deceased, including the trolley and beddings used by the deceased, were burnt. The hospital staff who got into contact with the deceased were also provided with digital thermometers and were instructed to take their body temperatures on a daily basis.
Meanwhile, Ebola screening has been further tightened as Uganda gears up for a huge number of pilgrims from across the world to commemorate the 3rd June Martyrs Day. Dr. John Baptiste Wanyanye is the Commissioner Emergencies Medical Services in Uganda's Health Ministry. He says Joint Operations Command and the ministry will keep a close eye on pilgrims from the Democratic Republic of Congo in particular.
It is infectious when someone starts having symptoms of fever, and our medical teams will be looking out for all those headache, fever, and we take the temperatures, and then that will form a basis. Because we have porous borders, even if we are checking at Entebbe and the entry, still there are people who walk through.
The Crimean Congo hemorrhagic fever is an infectious viral disease transmitted to people from ticks and livestock animals, and human to human during close contact with the blood, secretions, organs, or other bodily fluids of infected persons. It presents signs and symptoms similar to Ebola, like high fever, vomiting and bleeding, which can only be differentiated in the laboratory. While many cases of Crimean Congo hemorrhagic fever are mild and go unrecognized, Ebola is almost always a severe disease in which the case fatality rate ranges from 50 to 90%. The Ugandan public has been advised to report any such symptoms to a National Rapid Response Team of Health Ministry officials and World Health Organization. The WHO says the Democratic Republic of Congo remains on an epidemiological knife edge regarding the spread of deadly Ebola disease, despite the quick response to the threat. The deadly viral disease has claimed 27 lives since it was declared on 8th May. This is Catherine Nambi for VOA News in Kampala.
Ethiopian lawyer and disability rights activist Yetna Bush-Negusi was awarded the 2018 Spirit of Helen Keller Award recently in New York City. The 36-year-old was honored for her personal journey of determination and compassion and the global voice she gives to raise awareness for the rights of people with disabilities and inclusive education. Yetna Bush spoke with me first about her inspiration to become an activist after becoming blind at the age of 5, and she highlighted some of her recent accomplishments as one of the most influential global disability activists from Africa.
I lost my eyesight when I was 5 years old due to meningitis, and there was no medical access for saving my eyesight, so I turned blind. But another opportunity came in life and enlightened my life. I was taken to education because no girl in my area was allowed to go to school because all of them were candidates of early marriage. All my siblings and my peers got married when they were 10, 11, and 12. Because of blindness, turning blind at the age of 5, I was no more needed for early marriage. I was no more considered valuable by the community, so I was taken to a very far place, around 900 kilometers away from my families, to get education. There I was raised in a special school run by the Catholic Church, and then I attended my school and got my first degree in law. I co-founded the Ethiopian Center for Disability and Development, which is the first center trying to mainstream disability into development. And also during my high school days, I really felt that the level of exclusion and discrimination that people with disabilities face is enormous. I decided that I have to be vocal and bold enough to challenge this.
You, as an activist, I'm sure have overcome many challenges and with that have achieved many accomplishments. What are some of your latest accomplishments as an activist?
One of the latest accomplishments I had were building accessibility code in Ethiopia, because nobody thought about accessibility when it comes into disability, because Ethiopia is now among the fastest growing countries and a lot of constructions are happening here. But as Addis Ababa is also a capital city, what we first did was analyzing the level of accessibility of premises we have, especially in terms of public infrastructures, including roads, hospitals, transport, pharmacies, schools, and so on and so forth, and then getting to lobby for the enactment of the law in Ethiopia was one. So now at least we have a building code which really demands implementation. And I think the second most important achievement we have was trying to manage disability into development, because there were already services for people with disabilities. Now we have succeeded to get more than 2,000 development organizations include disability as part of their regular mandate. And the founding of the Ethiopian Center for Disability and Development itself, because I think that was a big thing. We didn't have a center. But before that, during my university days, I could see the establishment of the Center for Students with Disabilities in Addis Ababa University, where I took a major part in getting it established, was also one. Not only on disability is my achievement, I was also very active in the feminism movement. So I also founded the Female Students Association in the university, and I served as the first president. So in my opinion, any sort of discrimination, be it based on gender, race, color, or disability, is a threat for human development. So I make sure that no discrimination is tolerated and no discrimination is embedded into structures and systems. So because of this, I think it will be important to mention that I won in 2017 the Alternative Nobel Prize, which is the Rice Livelihood Award.
Again, congratulations on being the recipient of the 2018 Spirit of Helen Keller Award. And of course, past recipients have been Desmond Tutu, USAID, and the King of Morocco. So how does that make you feel to be in such company?
It's a very distinguished list of awardees that, as you mentioned, including Bill and Melinda Gates and Ban Ki-moon. What makes me more proud of is that Helen Keller is somebody that I have grown admiring and listening about and learning from. So I really feel proud of getting closer to her cause and sharing this spirit with her. So for me, she is the kind of icon, the big picture that I would see. I'm sure these people whom I have mentioned and you've mentioned have accomplished a lot of things. And this tells me that this prevention of disability is not something limited to somebody, not only to officials, not only to investors, but I think it also shows that it's a responsibility of us, persons with disabilities ourselves, to take the cause farther and to bring the movement forward. I really feel proud and honored to be part of this, but I really feel mostly honored tremendously by being closer to this amazing lady who has lived a very exemplary life in such a time, which was 100 years ago nearly.
That was Yetna Bersh Negusi, lawyer, disability activist, and senior inclusion advisor for the NGO Light for the World. You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15, 580, and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
I'm Yehiss Wuhib. 17 past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. The UN Children's Fund warns the Ebola outbreak in Democratic Republic of Congo threatens the health and well-being of children. While Uganda's Ministry of Health disputes a report of an Ebola outbreak in the country. And Ethiopian lawyer and disability rights activist Yetna Bersh Negusi receives the 2018 Spirit of Helen Keller Award in New York City. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
A Malian migrant is being hailed a hero and has been granted French citizenship after rescuing a small child who was dangling from a balcony in Paris. 22-year-old Mamadou Gassama won praise after climbing a four-story building, going from balcony to balcony to save the four-year-old on Saturday evening. President Emmanuel Macron said Gassama would be made a naturalized citizen, and he has been offered a position with the Paris elite firefighters. Reporter Catherine Field described to me how the drama unfolded.
A superhero, if you really want to get the feel of what he's being talked about here in France today. 22 years old, he was just walking down the street, the north of Paris on Saturday afternoon, heard people shouting, heard people saying, help, help, looked up and saw a young child, a four-year-old child, dangling from the balcony four stories up. Now, this young Malian said he didn't even think. All he knew he had to do was to save that child. He's
scaled up the front of this apartment block, up four stories from one balcony, jumping then up to the next. He said he didn't hesitate. He didn't think twice. In front of literally dozens of people on the street, he got up onto this fourth floor balcony, grabbed the hand of this little child, 4 years old, brought the child back into the apartment where the child lived. And he says it was then he realized what he'd done, and he just broke down on the floor and started shaking and crying. And then he just said to the young child, "Are you okay?"
What is he going to be doing this morning?
He has already been to the French presidential palace. Of course, once word of all this got out, he's been quite the media star. He's been made an honorary citizen of the area of Paris where he's been staying with his brother. He's been accepted into the community by the police and the fire brigade in that community as a distinguished hero. He was then taken to the French presidential palace where he met French President Emmanuel Macron, who said instantly, "We are going to make you a French citizen." This young Mali migrant has only got his Malian citizenship. He has documentation to be allowed to stay in Europe, but he cannot work. He came to France from Italy. Emmanuel Macron said, "You can stay. We're going to make sure that you get the right papers because this is the sort of valentry that we just adore in France." He has also made sure that this young man is going to get a place with the what's known as the Pompiers de Paris. It's the Paris firefighters. They are the elite firefighters of France. They're not part of the general community. They are part of the Ministry of Defense. They are considered the elite fire brigade in Western Europe. So the president has said, "You can go there." The Pompiers de Paris, the Paris Fire Brigade, has said, "Yes, we're here. We're waiting for you. Please come and turn up." And then later in the day, he will be going to the Malian embassy, where he's going to be taking a phone call from the Malian president. Again, just no one can believe that someone could have put themselves in so much danger without even thinking of it. And you see this man on television, and he just really doesn't quite know what all the fuss is about. He just says, "I didn't think. I just did it. Happened so quickly. The baby was crying. I knew what I had to do."
What an amazing story. And also it puts a human face to the migrant issue that is going on in Europe. So what does this really say for the migrants?
It says that migrants aren't just statistics, particularly here in Paris at the moment, where we've got more than 2,000 migrants camped out along a canal in the center of Paris. There's been a lot of talk of numbers, of how much the government is giving out financially to help feed and to keep these migrants safe. So if you like, this has been for once an absolutely good story of what a migrant can do, that they are human beings too, that if they see someone in some sort of danger, that in this man's case, he went and helped him because he didn't need all this publicity. In fact, there were questions being asked that, well, you know, he doesn't actually have the right papers to be in France. It could have been that he could have been shipped back to Italy, but he didn't. You know, he just knew there was something to be done. And that's the figure, that the face of someone who just, despite what he's been through in his own life, he knew he had to give a hand and help someone else.
How did the child actually end up out on the balcony?
We understand from police and the justice authorities that the child's father had gone out shopping, said he was going to be away for just a few minutes, and had left the balcony doors open. It's been very hot weather here in Paris, and the child was left alone, scrambled out to the balcony. The father is now in police custody, and there are, we understand, charges being laid against him.
That was reporter Catherine Field as she spoke with me from Paris.
For the first time, Nigerians are marking a national day of mourning. Activists and civil society groups across the country designated May 28th to protest what they describe as a pandemic rise in violent conflicts in Nigeria. Chika Oduwa reports that Nigerians gathered at rallying points in the country and on the internet to remember the lives of people violently killed in the country.
The Nigerian government has not officially endorsed the day, led by civil society activists. But across Africa's most populous nation, citizens gathered to remember the dead on the first National Day of Mourning. A public health activist in Abuja, Felix Abrahams Obi, said Nigeria is joining other countries that hold large commemoration activities.
Because of the frequency of the killings, it seems as if a whole lot of us Nigerians have become a bit numb to the pain. They're just seen as numbers. Oh, 20 people who were killed and it just ends there. But the people have names, they have families, they have friends, they have goals, they have visions.
One of the organizers, the group Enough is Enough, said more than 3,000 people have been killed in Nigeria this year. The terrorist group Boko Haram's war against the Nigerian government is entering its 10th year. Last Thursday marked 1,500 days since the now infamous Chibok schoolgirls' abduction, with more than 100 of them still missing. There is also deadly violence between nomadic cattle herders and farmers, with reports of dozens of people killed each month. Nigerian satirist Rudolf Okonkwo pokes fun at current affairs in Nigeria. But when it comes to the recent violence, he says there's nothing to laugh about.
I think it's important that Nigerian people rise up and say that enough is enough. I mean, they say it, but they don't put action behind it. Because most of the time Nigerians stay at home and just comment on social media, the government of Nigeria is so far away from the people. If you don't do anything to make them pay attention to what concerns you, they stay in their cozy places in Abuja and the capitals of states and do what they like.
Rights groups Amnesty International and Human Rights Watch have accused Nigerian security forces of contributing to the violence by using force on unarmed activists, like the members of the Biafran Secessionist Movement and Shiite Muslims. Human rights activist Chidi Odinkalu says the Nigerian government has a great deal to account for.
To be perfectly honest with you, doesn't tell a fantastic story of government, does it? If you end up in a situation in which you have uniformed security agents clobbering people, you don't want that kind of advertisement for anybody, and certainly not for a government that wants to assert that it's respecting rights.
Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari says he has done well in bringing security to a nation facing numerous threats. He recently announced his 2019 re-election bid. Chika Odua in Dakar for VOA News.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiyis Wahib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Bill Andrade, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Africa, I'm James Butte, host of VOA's Daybreak Africa. When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you the news as it happens. Listen to Daybreak Africa Monday through Friday at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC. And our 5-minute newscast come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
VOA Africa has built a successful, effective social media strategy through Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and other digital platforms. We are responding to our audience on the African continent and in the global diaspora. We believe in the power of connection and interaction to bring you news that is comprehensive, accurate, and objective. We see the changes in technology as an opportunity to engage with our audiences about the issues that affect them. At VOA Africa, we don't just report the news, we help shape the conversation on the continent. VOA, your trusted source for news and information.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning into the Sunny Side of Sports Monday through Friday at 1630 and 1830 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/sunny. It's the Sunny Side of Sports right here on the Voice of America.
VOAAfrica.com.
On VOAAfrica.com, the news updates never stop. Our primary goal is to keep you informed.
VOAAfrica.com, your trusted source for news and information.